Welcome, everyone, to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and much more. We have a fine show for you this week. We're going to talk to both Dan Friedman and Omar Gayaga, two of our finest contributors, about the not finest movie of the year. It's called Spaceman and stars Adam Sandler as a lonely Czech spaceman. Yes, you heard that right. And that is on Netflix. And we'll be talking about that in a little bit. We're also going to talk to Jenny Parrott about the Netflix TV show The Tourist. It's an Australian program about amnesia and crime and love and, I guess, mistaken identity to some extent. And it's a great show. And Jenny will be here in a little while to talk to me about it. But first, let's talk about the Oscars. The Oscars, as I'm speaking to you now, were last night, and as you're listening to this, we're a week or so ago, maybe a little bit less, and there's always a lot to talk about when it comes to the Oscars. And let's just say, and I'm going to crib from a piece I wrote on Book and Film Globe, that last year was a great year for movies, one of the best in a long time, and last night's Oscars reflected that. It was an entertaining mix of celebrity self-absorption, genuinely moving moments from artists who have toiled in decades, four decades, in obscurity. Good comedy bits, terrible comedy bits, political posturing in a time of global conflict, head-slapping senility from Al Pacino, a show-stopping performance by Ryan Gosling, and a song actually called The Fire Inside from the movie Flamin' Hot. The Oscars didn't even run that long, which is the usual complaint. I spend most of my life these days going to and writing about movies, so this should have been my Super Bowl. So why, then, do I feel like crap today? Maybe the difference between people who cover the entertainment industry and people who cover the Super Bowl is that the people who cover the Super Bowl either have already played in the Super Bowl or never had any hope of playing in the Super Bowl. But many people who write about or comment on the Oscars once had dreams of winning an Oscar or something like one. And so when the Oscars happen, on the one hand, I say, that's good, I liked that movie, good for them. On the other hand, I often find myself saying, why not me? This free-floating envy is, on the one hand, completely irrational. I am not Christopher Nolan, and I never had a chance of becoming Christopher Nolan. But take, for instance, one Cord Jefferson, winner of the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay for American Fiction. On the one hand, good for him. On the other hand, Cord Jefferson was, in recent memory, an editor and writer for Gawker.com, a website that took it upon itself as a major mission some 20 years ago to destroy my life and career, and succeeded to the extent that I still remember their efforts and will be bitter about them until my final days on Earth. Cord Jefferson himself had nothing to do with those efforts, but still, he has an Oscar, and almost no one else on Earth has an Oscar, including me. I have also tried to pitch TV shows and have failed miserably, but he is an Oscar winner, and the only thing I've won this year is fourth place in the Sunday Mystery Bounty at the Lodge Card Club in Round Rock, Texas. His inbox is full this morning, and I'm getting spam emails from iHerb.com. The morning after this Oscars, I felt like I always do after the Oscars, like a brain-dead loser who will never accomplish anything. Even though I know that I'm not brain dead, I'm not a loser, and I have accomplished some things, I'm definitely not one of last night's big winners. I watched the show on my modest couch in my modest Texas home next to my wife and my dogs while eating ice cream stuffed between two cookies. It was fine and pleasant, but it wasn't being there. It wasn't being anywhere. I turn as solace, like I do pretty much every year, to a 1989 Stanley Elkin essay from Harper's called At the Academy Awards, which references a very different time and place in Hollywood history, but has the same who the hell are these people vibe that I always feel as I watch the Oscars from afar. And I'm going to quote from the piece now. At the Academy Awards, it's a pointless, incomplete vaudeville. Bob Hope and Lucille Ball present 19 Oscar winners of tomorrow in an endless every-man-for-himself song and dance about ambition and narcissism, philosophically distilled from a chorus line without the benefit of that show's melody, passion, talent, or wit. It's a drawn-out, almost fastidious, customary kowtow. It's the obligatory standing ovation. You could put money down on who's actually going to get one. And these anger me too, Bob Hope's banter, these jokes, from my resentment pool. Deep as some sea trench rises a personal bile. It's stupidity that has me down, Hope's simplistic, condescending view of history and of ourselves. Me. Because I take it personally, the good-natured contempt, the artificial scorn, the false assumption like a wink up in your face like a slap, or the car salesman's nudge like an elbow to your rib that we're all pals here, that we're in it together. Well, we ain't. and I go back to myself now, and ain't that the truth? This is the only place you'll see Stanley Elkin's name today, but you can find 1,000 memes of Messi, the wonder dog, without even trying. The Oscars make it very clear who the real winners and losers of life are. Brothers and sisters, you're not the winners. And yet here I am, still going to the movies, staring up at the screen in wonder, dreaming my dreams for another year. Tonight I'm going to get another screening and will feel simultaneously happy and fulfilled, and also very bad about myself. The cycle begins anew.
What I'm doing is for everyone back home, and that makes me very proud.
And your wife, Lenka, of course.
I'm sure she's looking forward to having you home safe and sound.
He's not doing well. He misses his wife.
You go where I go, and I go where you go.
I just want to come home.
One of the most talked about movies of the year so far, not really in a good way, has been Spaceman, starring Adam Sandler, which was the number one movie on Netflix for the last couple of weeks. And I have two of Book and Film Globe's finest contributors here with me today to talk about Adam Sandler in Spaceman. We have Omar Gayaga, who wrote about it for us. And we have Dan Friedman, who reviewed Spaceman in an excellent piece for The Forward, where I believe, Dan, you're an editor there. You're still employed there as a culture editor.
No. I'm just freelance. I just work for them.
Editor of The Forward and a contributor to it. But also, Dan, you know, you proposed writing for us about the book that Spaceman was based on. And I felt like that was maybe a little obscure for an article, but I did want to talk to you about it because you're the only person I know who's read a Czech novel that Spaceman is based on. So let's start with you and tell me a little bit about the book and why the movie is not an effective adaptation of it.
Yeah. So, as far as I know, the book is, originally in English, certainly I did not read it in Czech, and it's written by an author whose name I'm sure I'm going to like horribly mangle, is Jaroslav Kalfar.
Sure.
That's close enough. And it was written in 2017. He's a Czech American, or he's a Czech who lives in America and has done for a while. And it's important because the book is really deeply Czech. And it's about the history of Czechoslovakia and then the Czech Republic under both during and after Soviet rule. And it's just so deeply imbued with the spirit and the hopes of the Czech people that just having a Czech name and a Czech name check, as it were, on the Spaceman film, like, denudes it of pretty much everything.
Right.
And one of the things that, and so we don't really know why, you know, why all these things are happening in the film. And then one of the other things that makes it sort of meaningful beyond just kind of this is the nation is that it's deeply about, so Jakub, who is the spaceman of Bohemia, the spaceman of the title, it's a story of his family. And in the novel, his father is a party worker who is a collaborator who, you know, basically informs on other people and tortures people. His grandfather is a pig farmer. We do see him a little bit in the film. And it's this double embodiment. So Jakub in the novel carries his grandfather's ashes and his father's curse throughout the entire time. And that's how he embodies and he's an astrophysicist, and that's how he embodies the nation and as part of the family and in a real way. And you don't really see that in the film. Omar really, I think, touched on how little you see in the film. But the novel is rich in family, in person, in character, and in the nation. And I feel like in place of those, you get Adam Sandler looking lost.
Well, yeah, Omar, you didn't get those strong Czech vibes from the movie, I take it.
No, it seemed a little out of place. I wondered, you know, like, why did they keep that setting if they weren't going to explore that? You know, why make that sort of the setting and the time frame of the movie if you're not going to explore any of that? I mean, we did get, you know, little glimpses, little flashes of the pig farming and the father and the near drowning, but not enough to really resonate, not enough to really shift the narrative and make it more than just a marooned in space guy movie.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I think Adam Sandler has proven his chops as a dramatic actor in recent years, but no one really would expect him to carry the burden of Czech history on his back. It doesn't really seem like he's the guy you'd hire to do that.
No, not your first choice.
Right? So let's talk about the space stuff, right? Like, I have this thing, and I've written about it on the site in the past. I hate movies about sad astronauts. Like, to me, astronauts should be swashbuckling heroes. I don't mind, like, scared astronauts. I don't mind space horror, but I don't like it when astronauts mope and cry in space. And I feel like there's so much of that. You know, if you look at Damien Chazelle's First Man, which featured Neil Armstrong crying on the moon, Interstellar has crying astronauts. I don't like it when astronauts are sad. And this seems to me like the ultimate sad astronaut movie.
I don't know about ultimate, because there have been some pretty good ones. There have been some pretty sad-ass astronauts and Black Mirror episodes.
Yes, but it is a sad astronaut movie.
It's definitely a sad astronaut. It's an isolated astronaut. So this is, you know, this is someone who's on his own. And I think it's a film about isolation, and it's a novel about isolation. You know, that this, you know, Jakub is grieving over the loss of the nation, the loss of his grandfather. He carries these ashes around. So it is a novel about grief and self, explicitly a novel about grief, but it becomes a sad astronaut movie without reason, because you don't know what he's grieving for, apart from like this sort of lost love, but you don't really know why he was deeply in love with Lenka in the first place or why he feels slighted by the loss. It's just a I'm sad and need to be redeemed type of movie.
All right, well, we got to talk about the spider. A wise alien spider, voiced by Paul Dano, appears on the ship, right, and becomes Adam Sandler's friend, like David Spade.
There's a spider, a big one, a 5 foot tall spider that initially appears as something in his face. I think that seems like it's a nightmare, like a dream, but then it actually appears as manifested on the ship. Very polite, soothing spider that wants to psychoanalyze him and get at the heart of his heartbreak and his traumas and learn about humans. But, you know, the movie, it's pretty clear that it's imaginary, that this is all in his head. No one at Mission Control sees the spider. The cameras are out. They never hear him talking to the spider, which I think was my clue that the spider's not real. But this is supposed to be a cosmic space spider that's been here since the dawn of time and is exploring and, you know, happened upon this space vessel and was intrigued by this human's longing and sadness.
Dan, how does the spider manifest in the book?
So in the book, it's very similar to the film in certain ways. But what there isn't in the film is a Freudian psychoanalyst back at HQ who is actually Jakub's psychoanalyst, and so we don't have this Earth analog that we kind of understand that Hanush, as he names the spider, is based from. So, like in the book, it's much clearer that it's kind of an imaginary spider, but very similar. And then also in the novel, we see the spider's homeworld. So it's much more fully realized as everything is in the book. But
so in the novel, the spider is real because there's a homeworld, or is the astronaut imagining that as well?
I think it feels pretty clear that he's imagining it, but in both, like, I think, you know, there's plausible, you know, it's left somewhat open, and, you know, and in it, Jakub certainly says that, oh, this spider knows things that I couldn't know, but I don't think we believe him when he says that. So it's kind of left a little bit open, but I enjoyed Hanush. I enjoyed this part of the book. Bizarrely, the live action human-sized spider, I felt, was one of the most successful things about the film.
Just the way it was, they depicted it.
the way it depicted it, the way that it actually did psychoanalyze him a little bit and allow and stopped him from being a sad astronaut, and the fact that it liked Nutella, I thought was kind of hilarious.
I could get past the spider. The movie had a lot of other problems that I struggled with.
Right. Like, and you pointed out in your piece that the scenes back on Earth where Carey Mulligan, perennial Oscar nominee Carey Mulligan, plays Adam Sandler's wife.
Linka, yes.
She's like in some kind of convent where is she? She's like in a home for.
She ends up. She goes to a place where single mothers can go to be away, pregnant women can go to be away from implicitly abusive partners, which is kind of a convent-like place,
right?
But it's kind of weird because I mean I think that you know Carey Mulligan and also Isabella Rossellini, who has another bit part as the commander of the operation, like I think they do fine with what they're given, but they're given very little. And it's weird because the Lenka part as written is much more of a like a younger Helena Bonham Carter type of role. It's like she's really quirky and really small, importantly, in the novel. And so it felt like they had to make her just more normal because they weren't going to spend the time exploring how slightly odd she is.
What an odd cultural product this is.
It really is. It was like a few too many ingredients in the stew.
All right. Well, I feel like it's been worth talking about. And so, Dan, you recommend the book.
Yeah, no, I think the book is great. It's really fascinating. It's got richness. The whole reason for the flight is this trip out to the Chopra, which has got these purple particles. But in the film, they don't really make much sense. Whereas in the book, you have smog, which is particulate smoke. You have the ashes of his grandfather. You have dust in important parts. So you have this constant. It's a theme, but in the film, it doesn't even barely makes it to just an
appearance. Right, and you also have a satirical world in which the Czech Republic can afford to send an astronaut to Jupiter.
Exactly. And I highly recommend the book. It's really a fun book. I see from reading the book makes you understand why they would want to make a film from it, because it's in homage to actually an excellent, interesting book. But watching the film doesn't necessarily make you understand why they wanted to make a film from it.
Yeah, the film is kind of like Solaris for dummies with the spider.
I wonder if this might have worked better as a you know limited series or something, you know, a 5-6 episode thing where they could have really stretched that out and gotten into the backstory and the check back. But to me, the fundamental flaw of the movie is just Adam Sandler. Like, I just did not buy him as this character. It's distracting to see him in this role. I think that's like the fatal flaw that none of that even could have fixed without recasting that part.
Right. You can get away with a sad astronaut if it's played by Matthew McConaughey or Ryan Gosling.
Someone.
Or Isabella Rossellini. I'd have been happy to see Isabella Rossellini as. I think that would have been a really interesting piece of casting as sad astronaut, but not.
Maybe Spaceman. Maybe in Spaceman 2.
Spaceman 2, Spacewoman.
Gravity 2, more gravity.
All right, Dan Friedman, Omar Gayaga, thank you so much for spending some 15 minutes of your day today talking to me about Spaceman, which is now on Netflix. And you can buy the novel. I would recommend buying it at bookshop.org and use as your affiliate bookstore the Bookhouse Milburn, which is owned by C.O. Reads Media, which also runs this website and this podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you.
Detective Sergeant Rory Slater, I hear somebody's gone missing.
It's my boyfriend.
You'd want to be very careful. These people, they're not messing around.
Where that's the one out of trouble.
Oh, can you not put the gun? Can you not with the gun, please?
What is it that makes me the enemy? I need to know.
Do you have any idea what it's like to wake up every day and realize that you've no idea what you've done?
I can't just keep running away.
Where are you, Vanel?
I have no idea. Just like old times.
Jenny Parrott brought a TV show to my attention recently. It's called The Tourist, and it is airing on Netflix. They recently put out season 2. Season 1 came out in January of 2022, and I just started watching it because of Jenny's recommendation. And she's here today to talk with me about it. She don't give me too many spoilers, Jenny, because you've watched both seasons.
I did. I want to extend that thanks to my dad, Don Parrott, who I saw last month. He was watching The Tourist, and I was like, what is this? Me and Dad like the same show? Cool.
Right? Well, it is very, it has kind of broad appeal because it's kind of a crime. I can see why it's a dad show. Like, there's crime in it. The main character is kind of shady. But there's also a very sort of sympathetic female detective who is, as you pointed out in your piece, she's a second lead, but she's really like a co-lead. She has her own journey to go on. And so the premise of The Tourist is that there's this guy played by Jamie Dornan who is involved in the opening scenes in a car accident and loses his memory. This takes place in the outback of Australia, at least the first season
it's
does.
So it's Texas.
Basically Texas. It's pretty grimy. I mean, everything's very dusty. Everyone's very dirty.
Yeah, they look thirsty.
They look thirsty, and you know, and even the people who clearly do bathe don't always look like they've bathed. It's just everything's very grimy. You know, it kind of reminded me. I've only watched the first couple episodes, so my knowledge of The Tourist is not as deep as yours. Kind of reminded me of an Australian version of a Coen Brothers movie in some ways.
Huh.
You know, it's like it's got that. There's wry asides. You know, there's kind of odd details. There's definitely. I mean, it's, you know, it's gritty and there's some violence, but there's also quite a bit of ironic comedy in it as well.
Yeah, that's what makes it so good for me. I love a mystery. I love a Western, but I love a drama. But I love it especially if they can also make it funny. Like, let us off the mat a little bit.
Yeah,
to laugh at absurdities and. Yeah, I like the combo.
There's a lot of comedy in it. Well, the main character, you know, is the sort of this. He's a tourist, as he puts it. He's not a tourist as in he's visiting Australia, although he actually it turns out he is visiting Australia. But he's really a tourist in his own life because he has no idea who he is or why he's doing what he's doing.
We love a show based on amnesia. We love it.
Well, to the point where, like, small characters, whenever they encounter this guy, they're like, you have amnesia? That's so cool.
Yeah. There's – it's not a huge spoiler, but there's also a coma. Like, it also has soap elements, you know? Like, oh, no. Little Johnny's in a coma. Oh, no.
Right. Well, it's that's the thing. It's a TV show. It doesn't have, like, super pretentious artistic ambitions, you know? It's literally presenting these elements as an entertaining story. And I love that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the heroine who's played by Danielle McDonald. She's sort of an apprentice cop in a lot of ways. She's like formerly part of the traffic division. And this is her first case that she gets assigned. And she's such an interesting, Danielle McDonald is such an interesting actor because she came to public attention for the first time in a kind of a coming of age rap movie called Patty Cakes. I don't know if you ever saw Patty Cakes. You're a musician, so I thought maybe that would be something you're familiar with. But she's like this, you know, young woman who like becomes a rapper, and then she was in there's some show about plus sized people on Netflix. I don't remember what it was called, but she also starred in that, and I know we wrote about that. But she's an interesting heroine because she's a big girl, right? You know, in fact, the whole first couple episodes, she's in this support group for plus size people. And yet she's like this full on romantic heroine in the show, which I thought was really interesting.
That is nice to see for representation for sure. And I think also it helps build the idea that everyone's doubting her, like as a detective or as a competent human or as a possible romantic interest. But it's like,
because she's a little bit more than a bit overweight, but she's not like morbidly obese or anything. She's just a big girl, right? And so, but you know, that doesn't seem to bother the extremely dashing and handsome and dirty. I keep wanting Jamie Dornan to take a shower.
Yeah.
Take a shower,
this
dude.
This tourist has no hotel room. He doesn't have services.
He doesn't have any money.
You don't have an ID.
It's like your worst nightmare. It's like your worst vacation nightmare. It's like waking up. It's like a dream. He's like in a bad dream about his own life.
It's like tour.
It's like going on tour as a musician.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, where am I gonna stay tonight?
That lady looks nice. Can someone help me?
No, I remember that when I felt like that. The one time I went on a rock tour, I was like, there were definitely some nights where I was like, why am I sleeping in this room? You know, literally someone who likes your show puts you up in their basement.
Yeah.
It happens, right?
Yeah, and sometimes they have a pet rabbit they don't tell you about, and like...
Yeah, exactly, or child. I'm like, I don't
know. Have you seen the American Assassin guy yet? And you're
no,
watching?
No, again, I just started. Oh yes, the American Assassin. He's a Texan. He's like a Texas
yes,
guy.
Yes, yes. I think that character is really fun to watch as a Texan. And I also want to say I like the violence level in this because there's
some.
You know, it's not like American, like there's not like machine guns and all that crap. There's like some gun violence and there's some really incompetent violence, which I love.
Well, again, that's the Coen Brothers element, right? It's like there's, you know, like the most famous scene from Coen Brothers lore is where the villain loads his victim into a wood chipper.
Yeah.
But there is this, like the whole show is like that scene from Raising Arizona where Nicolas Cage robs the convenience store and the guy says, son, you got a panty on your head. You know, it's got,
yeah.
You know, there's no way the people who made The Tourist hadn't seen Raising Arizona because it has that kind of spirit about it in some ways.
Mm-hmm. And some of the incompetent violence scenes had my dad being like, no, you shoot. Oh, man. And I was like, Dad, have you been in a shootout? And he was like, no.
No, but I've watched Jack Reacher.
But I know when they should be shooting.
Right. So all right. So season two, let's talk about that real quick. I don't want you to give away any plot points, but season two is not Australia set, right? It takes place in Scotland or in Ireland?
Ireland.
Well, that's a very different topography.
Yes, but they let it play as big a role as the Outback plays in season one. Uh-huh. And that's nice. The colors are different. There is moisture. There are trees. The accents are different. And there's still tourism happening.
Right. Like that, both identity tourism and actual tourism, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's really good. A lot of the characters have Irish names that I couldn't catch on to without like rewinding several times. So
you could watch, you could do like what my son does, which is just watch every show with subtitles.
Oh, I do.
Okay.
But still you're like, why did they say Niv? And you look online and it's spelled like N-I-A-H-M-N.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Okay. We're in Ireland.
We're in Ireland. And, you know, Ireland and Australia, they do speak English, technically.
Yes.
But it's not Texas English. Not the real, not the Queen's English like here, like in Texas. All right. Well, listen, Jenny, I wanted to thank you for calling The Tourist to my attention. And now we are calling The Tourist to the attention of the listeners of this podcast. And I you know, it's a really fun show that doesn't require a ton of work on the viewer's part. You know, it's not it's sort of a puzzle box show in that there's amnesia, but it's not like it's a deconstructed narrative.
I think you can enjoy it on a deeper level if you want to get poetic about identity and despair and love, or you can just enjoy the crime and the mystery.
Yeah, I don't know what level I want to enjoy anything on. I just want something to watch so I can forget about my own problems, really.
Yeah, well, this will do that.
All right, The Tourist is now on Netflix. Jenny Parent, thank you so much.
Thank you, Neil.
All right, thank you so much, Jenny Parent, for talking to me about The Tourist. Both seasons are now airing on Netflix. Also on Netflix is Spaceman, starring Adam Sandler, and that will be up there forever, and you can watch it and have your dislike for it, just like we all have as well. I am non-Oscar winning author Neil Pollack, the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe and the greatest living American writer. And we bring this podcast to you every week, talking about the worlds of books and film and streaming TV. We'll be back next week with more commentary and criticism. And I hope you join us then. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you soon. Original production.